Welcome to the Savvy Shrink Podcast, brought to you by MHNRnetwork.com. I'm your host, Andrea Schneider. I'm a licensed clinical social worker, therapist, and life coach. I will be sharing helpful information for individuals dealing with varying mental health challenges, ranging from trauma and loss to recovering from toxic relationships in love, work, and family, specifically as relates to narcissistic abuse recovery. Other poignant topics will include maternal mental health and special needs parenting, among others. The podcast welcomes guests who share their expertise in trauma-informed and evidence-based interventions, including the latest in neuropsychology. My ebook, Soul Vampires: Reclaiming Your Lifeblood After Narcissistic Abuse, is available at BookBaby and other digital online booksellers. I'm a believer in a strengths-focused perspective for my clients, which harnesses the power of internal wisdom and crafting the inner alchemy of healing. Please grab a cup of coffee or tea, and welcome to The Savvy Shrink. The Savvy Shrink is honored to have Dr. Katayun Kayani, psychologist specializing in maternal mental health, join us today on the podcast. Dr. Kat was drawn to this specialty after going through postpartum depression and anxiety with her first child. She has a private practice in Claremont, California, and runs a free pregnancy and postpartum stress support group in her community. Dr. Kat is the creator and the host of the Mom and Mind podcast, which focuses on perinatal mental health and wellness. Podcast topics range from preconception through pregnancy and postpartum. She hosts interviews with women and men who have gone from struggling to wellness, as well as the advocates, experts, and healthcare providers that work to help moms and families recover and thrive. Dr. Kat volunteers with Postpartum Support International as the area co-coordinator for San Bernardino County and contributes to the PSI blog. Dr. Kat works with San Bernardino County and their maternal mental health work group to offer training to local mental health and allied healthcare providers. Dr. Kat's mission is to support mothers and families, train healthcare providers, advocate for women and families, and bring discussions of maternal mental health out in the open. Welcome, Dr. Kat.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to talk with you.
We're thrilled to have you here. And as mentioned in her introduction, she is a specialist in maternal mental health and perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So Dr. Kat works with moms and families to heal from the difficulties of depression, anxiety, and other mood changes that can happen during conception, pregnancy, miscarriage, loss of a baby, birth, and postpartum. So it's really wonderful to have Kat here today to share with us her expertise, and she has a lot to say about working with new moms and their families in this very vulnerable period of time in the lifespan.
Part of my deal is I will talk to whoever will listen about perinatal mental health. So
wonderful.
So let's get into it.
The awesomeness. We are all ears. No, you're a very passionate advocate, speaker, presenter, trainer, psychotherapist, just an amazing, wonderful advocate for women's reproductive mental health. And we are all ears to hear all about your call to action and a lot of the circumstances that might be going on in the news recently that might be bringing light to this situation or at least attention to it, and how we as providers and as a society need to shift our focus to being more supportive of new moms, reducing stigma, and really helping moms and their families to get the help they need.
Yeah, absolutely. All of that. It's, being in the kind of perinatal mental health field and being a specialist, I'm connected to people like you who are also a specialist and other great advocates. And so we're sort of swimming in this world, so to speak, but people who are not really don't have a whole lot of information and access to the information that we have.
Right. Absolutely.
I feel like, there's more and more, there's more resources available. There's amazing organizations doing really fabulous work. And us in the field are working so hard to get information out to people.
That's the truth. For sure.
To the people who need it. But what I'm still finding and what we're still seeing and hearing about are stories in the news. One in particular that was public on Facebook and then went viral was about a woman named Jessica Porton who went to her OB appointment and, to say the least, was mistreated. And her story went viral because, you know, she went in for help, and the providers who were there with her, I'm assuming, didn't have adequate training because they took steps that landed her in the emergency room.
Yes.
Unnecessarily. So her story went viral, but unfortunately, it's not an isolated incident. Stories like that happen too often. I don't have any numbers on how often that happens, but it's part of the challenge that, you know, people who are having a hard time, when they hear stories like this, it reinforces the fear of going to get help and going to get support from medical providers. Absolutely. Or from anybody for that matter, because they're afraid of any number of things. Yeah, they'll end up in the emergency room, or their children will be taken away if anybody knows, you know, what kind of thoughts are going through their mind.
Sure. That's so true. Absolutely.
Yeah, it just puts people more at risk for feeling isolated and alone when people cannot be sure that their providers have adequate training or will treat them with dignity.
That's true.
So part of the call to action I think that we all have in this specialty is really getting more providers, healthcare providers, trained. But really anybody who comes into contact with a pregnant or postpartum woman or someone who's had a loss, a perinatal loss, at any point, everyone needs some extra training to be sure to really be able to treat the mom or the partner or the dad with the dignity and respect that they deserve and get them adequate treatment.
For sure. You hit the nail on the head. And with the complication that's most common for pregnancy and childbirth, somewhere around 20%, maybe a little more even, are impacted by perinatal mood and anxiety disorders. So this is a very, very common occurrence, and it's underreported due to stigma, due to a number of different circumstances, but especially in circumstances like Jessica, where, you know, I believe she had reported something along the lines of talking about her intrusive thoughts, and that was misinterpreted as like a psychotic process, if I'm understanding correctly. But can you share a little bit more about your observations of that and how providers need to understand the difference, and they need to have the training with the subtle nuances of diagnoses?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I hear it fairly often, you know, women coming in saying that they went to their providers and either, on some spectrum, or even said, oh, yeah, that happens, you'll be fine. Or providers who aren't trained well enough and then are alarmist to the women who are coming in and telling them that they need, you know, to be on multiple kinds of medications, or that, oh, my gosh, something else is going to happen to them, or if they don't take care of this right away. And anything in between there. But just in general, for most people have thoughts that are random and strange and can feel intrusive. But in particular for perinatal women, these types of intrusive thoughts, what we call them, are really sort of thoughts that come in like lightning really fast and can either be out of the blue or related to a situation that you're in. And the thoughts are usually scary. They're maybe strange. And they could be about, you know, something happening to your baby or to you, or you doing something to your child. And the thoughts themselves are so scary and so strange and terrifying that they make moms feel even more anxious and sometimes worried that they're with the intensity of the thoughts that they're going to do some of the things that they're thinking.
Hmm.
So in response to that, most moms who are feeling anxious, if it's a true anxiety, are also then trying everything in their power to avoid those thoughts or avoid doing the thing that pops into their mind.
Uh-huh.
For instance, a relatively common type of intrusive thought is, you know, baby hasn't slept, baby's crying a lot, mom's tried everything that she can to do, and she's sort of at her wit's end, and sometimes the anxiety is so intense that she starts to feel angry. And sometimes those angry thoughts feel rageful, and they might lead to a thought like just wanting to, like, you know, throw your baby. So obviously a mom who's really anxious and having a hard time is going to be alarmed by that thought, even though the feeling might be real in that moment. Then they will kind of deal with their thoughts by, let's say, like putting the baby down and just going to cry, and then feeling terrible that they had those thoughts and feeling guilty about that. And then, you know, all this other process happens. What kind of mom would think that? What's wrong with me? Why would I do that? And then feeling the guilt and shame of the whole process.
Right.
So that is relatively common for mm-hmm. women who are experiencing a perinatal mm-hmm. mood or anxiety change.
Such important information to get out there, because I think it really throws women for a loop if they experience it after having a baby, and many do. And, you know, and so to know what to do with that, and who do they call? Where do they get the help for that type of thing? Mm-hmm. And a lot of medical personnel are not trained to know the difference. For example, in this circumstance with Jessica, there was an immediate assumption instead of a thoughtful assessment, informed assessment about what was going on. And unfortunately, her circumstance became much more traumatic than it needed to be.
Right.
So what would you advise medical practitioners, whether they're physicians, psychologists, therapists, lactation consultants, how do people get additional training to really understand this and to help destigmatize the most common complication of childbirth?
Right. Well, I mean, there are some fabulous organizations that do really amazing trainings. Postpartum Support International is one of the leading organizations to offer these types of trainings to healthcare providers on a massive scale. And for in some places, you can go in person to a 2-day training to really understand the differences in the diagnoses and how they present and what to do. And it's open to everybody. You don't have to be a therapist. You don't have to be an MD, like doulas and midwives and lactation and nurses. Anyone can go to these trainings. It's really, really meant to give people the information that they need to at least have the fundamentals to understand the differential diagnoses, like the difference between having high anxiety, where you're scared by your intrusive thoughts, where they're strange to you, versus a postpartum psychosis, where you might be having strange thoughts or behaving strangely, but you don't yourself know that that's happening. Other people might notice it. And the thoughts that you're having don't seem strange to you. They seem what we call egosyntonic, like it's the right thing to do. When you're having thoughts that feel like that, then you have an emergency situation, when you're kind of disconnected from yourself in that way. Mm-hmm. Moms who are anxious are almost like hyper connected to their own thoughts and their own process, and they're kind of spinning in there with it. PSI, Postpartum Support International, does these trains. You can also take it online. Over the course of a couple of months, you can get all the training you need to have these fundamentals. And there are a couple of other really great organizations doing that type of work. But I think it's really, really important for like frontline providers, people who are going to be seeing these moms first in labor and delivery, uh-huh. in pediatric settings, where moms are going in with their babies and, you know, 2 days after delivery, 6 weeks after, or whatever
for
their
sure.
process is. OBs who are meeting with moms who might be having a hard time during pregnancy, because that's, you know, that's one of the times where you can really get, if you have the right information and you can spot what's going on with a mom, you can be preventative. You can help get her to services so that her symptoms aren't worsening and she's getting the kind of care that she needs.
Sure.
Yeah. Lactation, so doulas, mm-hmm. birthing classes, anywhere, really anywhere that a perinatal mom shows up, I feel like everyone should be trained.
I agree completely. And there needs to be so much more training out there. And I hope that will also be a part of the graduate school curriculum, more so for any clinician, regardless of their degree. It's a vital piece of mm-hmm. education that we as providers need to be trained in. I know I wasn't trained in it as a clinical social worker. I had to develop that expertise at postgraduate and,
right.
you know, through PSI and other trainings as well. But and also life experience. That's a big trainer too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The biggest.
For sure. So, you
right.
know, I think it's awesome though that you are out there and you're a trainer and you do amazing work. You also have a lovely podcast, Mom and Mind, which is incredibly powerful and so informative and so helpful to not only moms and dads, but also providers out there that need to learn more and become more informed and sensitive to this very important life stage, whether a woman is giving birth, she's dealing with infertility, perinatal right. loss, if a dad might have paternal depression, you name it. Your podcast covers all bases and it's really incredibly informative. So
thank
it's
you.
Just wonderful. Yeah. I'm so glad that you're
thank
doing
you.
It.
Mm-hmm. I absolutely love doing the podcast. It's my passion to perinatal mental health in general, but to get the word out to people. I just so strongly feel that, you know, like I was saying before, us in the profession, we have access to this information, but we shouldn't be the holders of it. Right. It should be like just easily accessed public information so that moms and families can have the information they need beforehand. Like you were saying, you didn't get training in grad school. I didn't either. And my initial experience came from going through postpartum depression and anxiety myself.
Sure. Ditto.
And yeah, right. Maybe like you, it was kind of a my own personal call to action.
Yes, to
start
was.
Specializing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Life changing.
Absolutely. 100%. It is a life-changing experience.
Mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. And I'm going to toot both of our horns here. We have been able to make lemonade out of lemons, you know, through adversity. Oh, yeah. We have been to be able to learn more about perinatal depression. And I think as therapists, it can be surprising. I'm speaking specifically for myself. It was blindsiding for me because I didn't think I could possibly have perinatal depression or anxiety after my second child, but I knew the signs right away. And I think that helped to be able to get help right away and to heal from it, to get through it and to see where the gaps in services were. And then also to see the compassionate people that were out there. And it was incredibly eye-opening, but it definitely lit a fire under me to want to help other women and their families during this very challenging time. And so many myths and expectations about what motherhood should or shouldn't be, I think that also compounds a lot of people's experiences as well. So,
oh yeah,
is it tough?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, part of what you're touching on also reminds me that, I mean, I 100% agree with what you're saying. And I had a very, similar experiences. Another thing that I do know is that the experience, this myths of motherhood are so profound. The idea that we are, you know, supposed to be happy and joyous and all of that. And you know, that's obviously not the case for everybody all of the time, but the pressure is still there.
Sure.
For things to sort of be perfect and for us to be our best selves all of the sudden in this really difficult and challenging transition. Even if you're well, even if you are fine, you don't have a perinatal mood or anxiety change, it's still a really difficult period of time. It's an adjustment.
It's huge.
It's a transition.
It's not a Hallmark commercial.
if we're honest, it's
not a Hallmark commercial. There's certainly periods of time where it is lovely and wonderful, but it is the hardest job on the planet. And unfortunately, I think our larger culture, society doesn't do a very good job of preparing women and men for the challenges that are involved, at least in the U.S. That's my perception anyway.
No, I absolutely agree. And I think one of the challenges, and I'm kind of switch gears slightly here, is that a lot of what is reflected out in media in terms of like motherhood and whatnot is from is fairly whitewashed, and there's not a whole lot yet of reflection of women of color, of diversity. And I think that adds another layer of the kind of myths to motherhood. And also within the perinatal world too, that the perinatal mood and anxiety disorder also, that a lot of the representation, a lot of the leaders, well, I don't know if that's totally accurate, but a lot of the representation even of women who are suffering is also of mostly white women.
Sure.
And so representation across the board needs to change. And that needs to be reflected in our services as well, so that people who are providing services are also trained in a way to understand cultural nuance and cultural differences in how people understand their mental wellness and how they receive support and how they reach out for support or don't and why. And I think that going back now to kind of tying in what we're talking about before is providers being trained, is that there needs to be also a level of training and understanding about cultural humility.
Yes.
That understanding somebody else's culture is paramount, but more specifically, or trying to understand. I mean, we can't fully if you haven't lived their life. But there is a way to be sensitive and understanding, and using a perspective of cultural humility rather than cultural competency. Mm-hmm. I think there was a period of time, and there still is, you know, a push for people to be competent, which is not possible, in the sense that really understanding somebody else's cultural experience is a process.
Yes.
And there's not like, you can't take one class and be done and say, well, I understand how Black women feel, you know, postpartum or something like that.
Right.
Understanding that it's a process, having yourself be open to the fact that you might not, as a provider, be fully aware of how someone's situation is impacting them from their from their cultural perspective. Exactly. And I'm not necessarily just talking about race or ethnicity, but I'm also talking about ability, sexual orientation, certainly
learning styles. People have
learning styles,
understanding.
Absolutely.
Diversity is so important to embrace in all shapes, sizes, and manifestations. Mm-hmm. And we have a long ways to go as providers to get there. So I think you speak to something incredibly important, that notion of cultural humility. It really needs to be front and center in future trainings, and I certainly hope it will be. I thought I saw some additional trainings coming out. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Oh, yeah. But no, there are.
Good.
There are. There are a couple of organizations that are really focused on this. There's the Perinatal Mental Health Alliance for Women of Color. Mm-hmm. And they share some statistics on their website that are, you know, just in terms of rates of experience of perinatal mood changes, you know, just commonly we are saying that overall there's like a 20% of women are dealing with this. It's actually, for women of color, it's about twice the rate of white women.
Profound.
So it can be 38 to 40% or, you know, and that, I think we're just kind of going on who's reporting.
You're right.
There's, I mean, my assumption has always been that the statistics on what we are reporting, like the 20% that we all agree on, is probably low.
For
in
sure.
terms of who's actually reporting.
Yeah.
I can't back that up with any statistics. But that's just a feeling.
Yeah.
From having, you know, kind of been in here for a little while.
Sure. I would agree completely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, and there's a really great conference that is being put together, called Imagine Me. And it is a maternal mental health conference just for women of color, built for a place for them to be reflected and hopefully feel safe.
Good.
Because I know there were a lot of folks in the perinatal world who were feeling like that, you know, that was really a need and a gap in services and in understanding. And I'm just thrilled to know that that is happening. And,
same. You know, I'm happy to see that. I think there's incredible need. And we all learn and continue to learn throughout our work as providers. And I think anybody who claims to be done learning, really, that's concerning. Yeah. I think it's a lifelong process. And I think, speaking from my perspective, at least, I think it's really important when we meet clients of different backgrounds of where we come from, to be able to meet them where they're at, to really empower them to educate us as providers.
Right.
We don't hold all the information. We can learn from our clients too. And I know that you're very collaborative with the people you work with as well. But I haven't always heard that from other providers out there. There's a real top-down, very disempowering stance that a lot of, unfortunately, clients have relayed to me that really did not reflect respecting diversity, whether it be culture, whether it be ethnicity, religion, et cetera. So I'm a true believer that providers need to really be open to learning from their clients, that they can be educated from their clients or their patients about their story and telling their story, because that's the truth of that patient's or client's experience. And they need the validation. They need the support. And whatever way they look at the world, that can, there can be some advantages to building additional social supports or potentially identifying some gaps in services where we as service providers can try to link those resources in for those clients or patients. but we mm-hmm. sure do have a long ways to go. And I'm really glad that this is front and center. It's really important information.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. It really is. I think where we've gotten into trouble is because of a really old school power dynamic mm-hmm. that like you were alluding to, the doctor has the power. The doctor knows you have this degree. You went to school. You understand all of these things. Mm-hmm. Well, that might be true for some part of what you do. But mm-hmm. what I've heard that is always disempowering is when a woman goes in to her provider and tells them about their story, and the provider comes back with something like, well, I've never heard of that. Mm. So it basically doesn't exist, essentially. Or, no, you're wrong. This is actually what's happening. Mm-hmm. And it's not, this is part of like also the cultural humility part and just having, you know, some training on bedside manner, so to speak.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Is that like you as the provider, yes, you may understand medical knowledge, but you don't understand what is happening for that mm-hmm. woman. Mm-hmm. And in order to help her, you really have to listen.
Sometimes you
cannot deny somebody's experience. It's just as a healthcare provider, if you're going to be helping somebody and you're discounting their experience in order to put in your medical knowledge and your expertise, well, then you're not really taking care of them.
Exactly. Good point.
Unfortunately, it happens still too often. And I think it puts us as patients, while this tide is turning, it puts us in a position, and if I can also specifically speak for women of color for a moment, to have to educate people while we are also suffering.
Absolutely.
And it's a terrible position to be in. Mm-hmm. Because oftentimes, you know, if you're going through something and you're in it, it's mm-hmm. hard to find the words to explain to yourself, let alone somebody else.
Right.
And then to have to try and, you know, if you have a provider who's not open mm-hmm. and understanding and able to put mm-hmm. on that humility cap, like, okay, maybe I don't know everything about this.
Sure.
It's putting the mom in this, like, let's just say for perinatal mood and anxiety for mothers, it's putting them in a really difficult position because they're not going to be able to necessarily describe to the provider what's going on. And this is why the training is important. Mm-hmm. So that the provider can be anticipating or at least doing a screen or asking about questions for the mother to not have to bear the burden of going through it and also teaching their provider.
Sure.
It's unfair.
It's unfair. It absolutely is. And to have to, you know, self-monitor and advocate for oneself in that period of vulnerability is just astronomically overburdening. So again, I think it goes back to more training for sure. But what suggestions would you have for therapists that are of mainstream white culture? What would you suggest to those of us who are not people of color, but do have a cultural humility approach and yet still need to continuously reach out and create a environment of safety for people of color? What would you advise, you know, other providers out there to really be aware of and to learn more about from mm-hmm. their clients, but then also from other trainings? Are there specific things that you think that we all need to be aware of and mindful of from the very get-go?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's probably a lot and uh-huh. probably more than I know to direct people to. Uh-huh. But I think first, if possible, if you are a therapist and you are wanting to help women of color and you are in a position of wanting to help specifically with perinatal, I'll just say first, like if you haven't kind of really dug deep into your own biases yet, mm-hmm. You haven't tried to understand where your hangups are and be honest with yourself about where your racism lies, where your, whether it's obvious to you or not, mm-hmm. or clear to you or not, that you have a set of biases. We all do. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that people can kind of own that, at some point in my life, I was trained by other people to think a certain way, or at some point in my life through social media, through the news, I developed this specific set of ideas about these groups of people. If you can self-reflect on that to see where your kind of, you know, where your difficulty lies.
Good.
Because wherever our difficulties are is where we're also going to be either less than helpful to others or potentially harmful.
Yes.
So self-reflection, if you need to, you know, go to a therapist who can help you work through those kinds of understandings and get a little bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, read books, watch documentaries. Yes. And it doesn't have to be specifically about perinatal mental health. I mean, there are a couple of documentaries, one of which I can think of is 13th, directed by Ava DuVernay. And there are a lot of kind of really great information and history about how and why things are the way they are. Okay. So I would say find resources where you can educate yourself.
Good.
There's quite a few conversations happening, I believe, around kind of in terms of that if we as people who need to learn more about how to be more culturally humble and use humility in our practice, in our life, you can do searches for information for yourself and books and documentaries and to really try and understand. I think where we get into some difficulty is where we rely on other people to teach us.
Yes.
And again, it's one of those things that it's fine to have a dialogue and to learn from other people. But if you are relying on somebody who's in the position where they are oppressed or they are a minority, if you're relying on them to tell you what to do and how you should be, you're also still putting them in a position of having to kind of train.
Yeah.
Train you, and it's not necessarily their responsibility.
You're right.
If that makes sense. So I think it's good to go out and get your own information and do your own research. It's also okay to ask questions. Absolutely.
Good.
But if primarily what you're doing is relying on somebody who, for the sake of what I'm saying right now, for somebody who's in an oppressed minority to be teaching you how to treat them better, it's also oppressive to them.
For sure.
They're having to do more work.
And so they have like a double, triple stigma because not only are they dealing with a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder, which is stigmatizing unto itself, but they've also got the added layer of potential discrimination or racism or what have you. So it's, cultural sensitivity, cultural humility is a huge, huge piece of the puzzle. Absolutely.
Right. And I think for the Jessica Porton story, one thing that I like that she did do is she recognized that because she was a white woman, she was probably able to go home and she was allowed to keep her children. And then that is not always the case for women of color. And again, I don't necessarily want to like strike fear into people, but I also want to speak to the reality that women of color don't have that same experience. Oftentimes their children are taken or they are misunderstood and, other things happen that if you have sort of the privilege or the benefit of the doubt don't happen. So this is part of why I think across our system, across all of our levels of care.
Yeah.
We need training on multiple levels. We need the perinatal mood and anxiety disorder training. We need the cultural humility training. And there need to be systems, better systems in place and better protocols in place so that, women who are already injured, so to speak, aren't also being insulted and having to then deal with the trauma of, hey, I went to go get care and I'm worse off now. Again, that's not the case for everybody. There are really good providers out there. There are good doctors. But also we have to address the broken parts of the system in order for everybody to get the care they need.
Yes.
And these are, I would say, broken parts of our system. There's no continuity. Place to place. And in my mind, this is a relatively easy fix. What gets in the way is, bureaucracy and then the systems. The process of systems take a long time. There has to be a meeting and then there has to be, back and forth about what protocol are we going to use and is it evidence-based? And all those things are important. But I don't think it takes a whole lot to, as an individual, come into the room, into a treatment room, with an open mind and a compassionate heart.
Absolutely.
And with the goal to really help somebody, even if you don't understand what's going on.
For sure. from that stance of curiosity, but truly creating a safe holding environment at the same time and mm-hmm. allowing the client to really share their story, have it validated. And as a provider, taking the responsibility of doing the research that needs to be done, the training that needs to be done outside of the therapeutic hour or the medical appointment. Then having a stance of unconditional positive regard for the patient or the client. We have a long ways to go. We surely do. And just very thankful to hear your take on this and how things need to be different in terms of training for this call of action and also towards cultural humility. These are really, really important concepts and very appreciative of your sharing that with us. And I also would like our listeners to hear more about what you're doing in your work and how they can find you, because you've got your podcast going, you've got a lot of wonderful trainings going on. So if you could share with our listeners how they can find you and what you're up to currently in your practice, I'm sure folks will definitely want to hear what's going on with Dr. Kat.
Well, thank you for that. Sure. Thank you. So the podcast is, I offer weekly episodes on basically everything that I can think of or suggestions people give me about what to cover for perinatal mental health. Mm-hmm. We speak with experts and advocates, and I thank you for coming on and being on with us.
Sure.
And also real stories. We have moms and dads and family members who come on and tell their individual stories, which I think is so powerful. And part of the goal of the podcast really is to have as many people issues Well, as many people's stories, as many issues, as many topics covered as possible. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a while to get to everything, but I'm game. So
awesome.
That's what we're doing.
You are a rock
star. As much as possible.
Incredible work. Love the Mom and Mind podcast. It's just chock full of information. So incredibly helpful. And it's wonderful that anybody can access that information. And
oh, yeah. They can go to www.momandmind.com and find links to other platforms. Like it's on iTunes and Spotify and Google Play Music and iHeartRadio. And basically you can access this information anywhere you listen to a podcast already.
So helpful.
Yes. That's available. I'm working with San Bernardino. I'm local in Claremont, California. So I do see people in my practice, primarily moms who are having a hard time. And I run a support group out of Pomona Valley Hospital that's free and open to the public for anybody who can make it and wants to come there. And all that information is on my website.
Great.
As well.
And what's your website?
drkaeni.com. Dr. Kaeni.
good.com.
And yeah, so people can find links and reach out to me specifically if they need to. Some of the stuff I'm doing in San Bernardino County, where I cover as a volunteer area coordinator for Postpartum Support International. Anyone who's in the county finds the PSI website, gives me a call, I get them to resources. And I'm also working with the county to keep up an annual training on perinatal mental health so that the area service providers and providers in the public as well can have access to training. And generally that's free, which is so cool.
Yeah. It's wonderful that you offer that out there. It's an incredibly valuable resource. And you're out there speaking and you're also podcasting and then doing the one-on-one work with the moms and also in groups. So you're doing incredible work out there for the perinatal community. I'm very thankful for your expertise today. And is there anything else that you wanted to share with our listeners today that would be helpful to close out our podcast?
Thank you. Just if you're a provider who's listening and you're not and you haven't yet had training in perinatal mental health, I would just really encourage you to find the online training or an in-person training to get that additional support. Even if you are not specifically treating perinatal women, you will come across people who have had a perinatal mood or anxiety disorder in the past, and it may still be affecting them or it may be affecting some parts of their relationship with their children or their spouse. And it's just so important to understand some of the dynamics that can happen and that if left untreated can impact relationships for a while. And also if you're a mom or family member who's listening and you're concerned about yourself or you're hearing yourself reflected here, or you have a family member who might need the support, postpartum.net is an absolutely fantastic place to go for information and to see if you can find local resources in your community anywhere in the United States and in a lot of places internationally. There's help available there's support available both professionally and personally. And it's just a matter of doing a little bit of a search and you can find it and get the help you need.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Kapp, for joining us. And there's a lot of work to be done. I'm so happy that our listeners have been able to learn today with you, and also providers, I'm hoping, have been able to hear this podcast and take some really great pearls of wisdom with them for next steps for their practices, whether it be medicine or psychotherapy or lactation consultation, or whether it be a training as a doula. There's so much more training that needs to be done. And it's wonderful that there are people like you, Dr. Kapp, out there calling us all to action and doing what we need to do to make the world a better place. And mamas are lucky. So thank you so much for being a part of this conversation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again for listening to The Savvy Shrink. For more information about this podcast, go to thesavvyshrink.com or visit my website at AndreaSchneiderLCSW.com. This is your host, Andrea Schneider. Until next time.